This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
John Clark Ross,
Alison Malden,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, John, you've been quite closely involved with all sorts of writing activity in the Palmerston North area.
Oh, yes. I was for a while the chairperson of the Central District Branch of New Zealand Society of Authors, and also its national rep. But nowadays, people decide that's much too big a job, and so of course, I'm 83, so I'm way past it. Being too active anyway.
So the New Zealand Society of Authors?
Yes.
Is that a big group?
Oh, yes. Group? Well, it's a nationwide group, yes.
Yeah.
It has a head office in Auckland and a national president and so forth, but it costs $120 a year to subscribe, so
yeah.
A lot of people think, well, they don't get enough out of it to actually be members.
Yeah.
But I do continue as a member, yes. But also I'm a member of the New Zealand Poetry Society.
Yeah.
And a meeting member. And, of course, locally we've got the Writers' Hub. Because the Central District branch is now rather vast,
yeah.
It includes Taranaki and Whanganui, Palmerston North, Featherston, Monsmouth, Wairapa, and up to Gisborne and Rotorua. So it's pretty massive. So the only way we can work is to have some writers' hub groups in each centre, and of course, this is a group for anybody interested in writing. They don't have to actually publish anything, but they're interested in writing itself.
Yeah.
They're working on something, hopefully, and they don't need to be members of the society.
Okay, yeah. So what sort of numbers? So you have what, regular meetings of the Writers' Hub?
That's right, yes. We sit in a far corner on the first floor of the central library, and we have somebody talking, and generally to each meeting, although at the end of the year we have a general chat around about what everybody's been doing.
Yes.
No.
So you meet monthly?
Yes, monthly, on the second Monday of the month.
Okay.
Is it at 5:30? Yeah.
At 5:30 in the library on the... Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Do you get many turn up?
Oh, well, it depends on the topic. And, of course, with this COVID thing, some people have been a little bit shy, I think.
Yeah.
But we've had up to, 15, 20 people.
Okay.
But sometimes it gets down to about 10. But if we could, get somebody from outside, say with a Maori writer we've had, and quite a lot of young Maori people came to that talk.
Yeah.
She was wonderful, actually. I wish we could get more people like that. But they're rather busy than themselves.
Yeah, so they'd have their own circles.
They would have their own circles, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So is this writing across a really broad range of writing?
Oh, yes. Of course.
So
of course, some people write poetry, some people write fiction, but an awful lot of people non-fiction writers, and writing local history or... like Val Mills, for example, who wrote a thing about the public baths they used to have in one in Palmerston North.
Ashley Street,
the old one. Yes.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of local history writers.
Oh yes, there is a lot, and somebody dug up a very old anchor from the entry to the Manawatu Gorge. which was an anchor which had belonged to the ferry boat that used to go and take people across the Manawatu before there was a bridge there.
Oh, right. Yep.
And there was the anchor. They found it.
Yeah. Why?
So that was quite exciting.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. When he was saying that, I was thinking it might be down by the Foxton River mouth or something, but no.
Well, there's all sorts of things down there as well.
Yeah.
They could reinstitute something as a tourist attraction.
Well, they used to have a little boat you could take on the Foxton Loop.
Yes.
But the Foxton Loop... But that's... it's got a bit polluted, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Mm. Okay, so are many of these people published writers?
Oh, yes, here and there. Mm. The guy who supports us in the library, Sean Monaghan, he's published quite a bit in fiction, but as e-books, not... quite a bit. And Dale Haywood has published several war novels about the New Zealand wars or about his war in Vietnam, and so forth. Rangatahi, which is basically a self-publishing she publishes it, but you pay for it. Tony Chappelle is another writer who's published some novels.
It's
interesting, particularly in the 19th century.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think, and Jeff McNeil has just come out with a book on machines. I'm not sure.
Oh, yes. I went to the talk about that.
Yes, yeah.
I went to the talk about it. Yes, I had an interest because of, I guess one of my father's uncles would have been in that battle.
Oh,
and he was finally killed at Passchendaele on the 12th of October 1917. But he was a sergeant in the Otago Regiment, which was... there was another person who was a Chisholm who was I was interested in, was trained, went all the further training at Sling Camp, then came to France and went to the front, and he was, he was blinded on the first day of the battle, and that was that was his luck. That was his. So at least he survived.
Yes, that was one thing. Yeah, it was actually it's a big piece of work that Jeff did.
Heavens, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was very impressive.
I think there's a lot more information around now that they can get into, a lot of those diaries and accounts and letters.
Oh, sure.
Available.
Oh, good gracious, yes.
Yes,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things I was involved in was editing a book about the people with the New Zealand Chisholms who actually fought in the First World War, and then I myself wrote a book with some contributions by other people with New Zealand Chisholms in the Second World War. One of whom
you have a connection to the Chisholms, have you? Or
my mother was a Chisholm, one of her brothers was a radar officer who went through the Second World War, and he married a lady called Hope Parry, who had been a code breaker at the Bletchley Park outfit, although she was basically based at Eastcote. And airfield base rather than at Bletchley itself. But it's quite strange because Bletchley was so hot and secret that they actually don't have a comprehensive list of the women who served there. So in a way you have to go tell them.
Yeah.
I think a few families have had surprises when they found out.
Oh, yes.
That there's been an involvement and it's all been very hush-hush.
That's right. Well, the strange thing was that my my aunt, who was a lovely person and was perfectly open and friendly about many, many things, was totally silent about her war service until they were released from their secrecy oath, which was not very long before her death, which is from cancer, unfortunately. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was in. But my other uncle was an aero club flyer, and so at the beginning of the war, he was enlisted in the Civil Reserve, and they were all invited if they would like to volunteer to go off as part of New Zealand. The RNZAF, to fly with the RAF, and he did, and he was a bomber pilot, first in pretty useless planes, which were you could only safe to fly at night, and then he was in a Wellington and it was shot down on the night of 12-13 June 1941. On his 19th mission, and killed.
Yeah. Oh,
so I've been to the place where his plane came down, and what he did was, although the plane was burning quite badly, he kept it up in the air, so it did not crash into a house full of Dutch people, the Langendorf family, and for which they were exceedingly grateful. Quite a few, about 1960, they had the technology to excavate the remains of the plane from the ground, and with lifting the bombs out. And they were still full of bombs, and they were actually in a very dangerous state remotely controlled and cranes and with television and crane and so forth, and took them off to a safe distance. And then it took the remains of the crew to the Jonkerbos and Commonwealth Cemetery at Nijmegen, and I've been there, but I have his New Zealand wings, which have been underground for 25 years.
Oh, wow!
Yes,
just about in good, surprisingly good condition.
Yeah. So I suppose with the family then, that would be quite significant. Was he talked about a lot?
Not a lot, no. Right. But my grandmother, her oldest child was my mother, Joyce Amy Chisholm. Right. She was Amy Terry Chisholm, and Alan was the one who was in radar, and the youngest one was Bob, Robert Stanley Chisholm, and she really never got over his death, never. It's the way it was,
That's
the way things were.
Yeah. Well,
my father, on the other hand, he was a rugby player. Mm. Played for Poneke as a wing forward, what you call now the Lucy, and cracked one of his shoulder blades in a scrum, and so they didn't send him overseas at the beginning of the war because he had a wife and a child, which was me, and then when they were looking for more men to enlist, they decided his cracked shoulder blade was enough to keep in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So he had a rather boring war for about 3 years, and then they decided, well, he's doing clerical work and counting. He might as well be doing it in civvies as in uniform.
Oh, right. So he was in uniform but civvies.
Oh, yes. He was in the army, and then he transferred to the New Zealand Air Force. So he was actually in Levin for a couple of years. But I remember him coming in through the door, wearing a sandpaper suit, as they called them, you know.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
scratchy.
Ah, yeah, the military. Yeah.
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 But it was rather difficult, I guess, for my, especially for my sister, because, and you know, while the husband was away, the mother ran, had to run the house.
Yeah.
She was. She said, "What goes?" And of course, when the husband turns up and he's home for a while, then suddenly it's him who says what goes. And she, I didn't really notice that, but she actually found it quite upsetting.
Yeah. She was a bit older, was she, your sister? Or?
Sorry,
that your sister, you said.
My so sister, my sister, who was just 2 years younger than me. Yes, she was born in 1940.
Oh, yes. So she was very young when he was...
Pretty much, yes. She was, so. Yeah, that's right.
So you mean she was going through the terrible twos at the time that he...
Well, thereabouts, yes. Yeah. Or threes or fours, you know, the frightful fours, perhaps.
Yes.
As they say, yes. Yeah. So, but I was born in Wellington in December 1938, which is really a sort of... So it was still just... New Zealand was recovering from the Depression... My mother had a bachelor's degree in history from Victoria University, but she was trained as a teacher.
Would that be unusual then?
It was a bit unusual, yes. But she, the one person who had money, you see, was my grandmother, because she was a qualified pharmacist, and there weren't all that many of them.
Yeah.
So, and while she had actually her own shop, which he owned in Upland Road in Kilburn. Yeah.
Now, I find this very interesting because my father was one from a large family.
Oh, yes.
And he had sisters who were, they were adults through the Depression.
Oh, yes.
Quite a few of them, even married ones, had their own businesses or worked.
Yes.
There's all this talk now about women couldn't do various things.
Oh, yeah.
There was quite a lot of, I think, either some may under some circumstances or...
Yes.
Or if they really wanted to or something, they were able to, but there were other options.
I think it was a bit of a financial thing, though.
Yes, well, my father, my grandfather, was an insurance salesman. He up till the early 1920s, he was he was working as an accountant. You know, there was a sort of mini depression in the early 20s, when the British and cut down the price they were going to pay for paying for New Zealand butter and other things. They just arbitrarily said we're going to pay you less, and New Zealand went into a depression, a mini depression, and. So that people couldn't engage him to do their accounts, so they just scrabbled away to doing their own. Yeah. And he went into insurance, and he tried a couple of other ventures, and which were ill, hopeful, but ill judged. But again, the timing was wrong.
Yeah,
you know, the 1920s was just not a prosperous time, and of course, in the end of the 20s, you're getting into the with the Great Depression, the terrible one, and you're still really recovering from that in 1938, 1937, 38. You know, it's hard time. They were hard times. They're getting better, but they were tight.
Yeah.
And then along comes the war, nine months after I was born.
Mm.
Yeah, and so again, it was a time of scarcity and low pay and
Of course, I suppose there's the view, if everybody's in the same situation, then low pay isn't such a serious problem as if everyone else has a lot of money and you don't have much, then you can't participate.
Well, public transport was quite good in those days, and we were used to walking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, walk to the tram.
Yeah.
And then got at the other end of the tram stop, you walk to where you had to get to.
Yeah.
Well, and then...
Well, people would be
later. They brought in buses eventually, and but still,
And people would have been relatively slim then compared to now, possibly.
Oh yes, well we're
not smoking as well.
Well yes, unfortunately my father smoked,
and he
had trouble with nervous tension, and because he'd sort of started smoking rather early when he was. He went to work when he was 16, and I suppose he started pretty soon after that because everybody around him was smoking.
Yeah.
And if he tried to do without smoke and the nicotine, and you know, he got nervous tension and build up, and he couldn't wean himself off that. Unfortunately, he didn't. He didn't drink.
Yeah.
Because his father was a drunk. He didn't drink himself. So when once in a while he did drink, it hit him too hard.
Yeah.
You know, at a party or whatever.
Yeah. So did the war have much of an impression on you? Because you were young through it.
Well, of course, I was young. We went through. Right. I was six, I guess, at the end of the war.
Yeah.
But.
So how did
you? My mother remembers. Yeah. Walking along Langton Quay, and one of these American you had all these American Marines who were based out in Paikakariki, and coming into town for a bit of fun. And she said, "Hey, babe, won't you come dancing?"
And she said, "Yes."
She said, "I'd love to, but I got to go home and cook my children's tea." Yeah, she was. So that was a sad opportunity missed.
Yeah.
But probably, in a funny way, it was quite a fun time for children because of excitement of pretending to shoot and fly.
well, the thing was that we were living on the hillside in the Highland Park area, and on the top of the bridge was it had been flattened off, and there was a Bofors gun firing at the, as it were, at Japanese aircraft, except that it was wooden.
A fake one to scare them off. Yes.
the real gun was a bit down the hill and a bit hidden.
Yeah.
And then a little bit further down the hill from that gun was there were a couple of concrete gun emplacements and it was coastal artillery for firing at anything that came into the Wellington Harbour. Mm-hmm. I think they did once fire at a ship, which didn't give the proper signals, but unfortunately they missed it. Mm-hmm. But it would have given the ship a fright.
Yeah,
but it was but these had originally been there from the First War, during the First World War, against German raiders, and they were disappearing guns. That is to say, you had a concrete parapet, and the load gun could be loaded. It rose up and fired, and then could drop down again at it, behind the below the parapet while they reloaded.
Mm.
It's cunning.
Mm. Yeah.
So that was Fort Buckley. My mother wrote a little history of Fort Buckley, little leaflet. Mm. Yeah. But there was, of course, there was there were some huts which the gunners had lived in, and Miss Cody, who was the daughter of one of the soldiers who'd lived there, went on living in those huts for years, as long as she could live independently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was a track from went down the ridge to Kaiwharawhara. But you could get down from Barnard Street down to Kaiwharawhara, or as we called it, just Kaiwharawhara, in about 10 minutes if you had went at some speed.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go down there and get the Eastbourne bus and go right round to Zadays Bay or to the bus terminus and walk round to Pencarrow Head. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My father and my mother were both trampers.
Yeah.
And So their friends' network was trampers. It was for the people who'd been a fellow trampers and the Tararua Tramping Club. Or, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now, if they were tramping in the Tararuas, you had to be very good skilled, didn't you? Because it was quite dangerous.
Well,
weather.
Yes, yeah, yeah, so I mean, on one occasion, it seemed a pretty reasonable day. I was staying with quite a quick little batch, family batch at Waikanae, and walked up the Kapakapa Nui and went along the ridge and then walked. And then there's a hut there we could stay in, and they walked along with a branch ridge to the main range, and walked up into a blooming snowstorm, a very vicious storm, and just myself and a chap called Dave Ogilvie, who was, and yeah. But we got to Alpha Hut, so we were okay.
Yeah.
And then, came down, and heard that a couple of my friends were missing.
Oh, wow.
And they had actually been trying to do a southern crossing, the week before, and they died. They were on Mount Hector.
Mm.
And they're only about 20 minutes from the hut. From the hut, the Kaim hut. But that was quite a business walking.
Yeah.
And in those days, you didn't have any helicopters. We all just had about
GPS or locator beacons.
No, we had about about 40 people would walked up there
Oh, it's a large group.
And crammed into the lower hut, and then went up to Kaim and went up to the top of Hector and carried them down.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.